These are the Qayshi Tapes. Uman and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Qayshi, the longest-running rock station in the country.
Hey, we're back. It's time for of the Qayshi Tapes. I'm John Hewlett. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUman. And my partner is
Favaz. And you can find me at Qayshi Guy on Twitter.
Today, we're going to dissect an interview that was done in 2001 by myself with Bob Weir, the legendary member of the Grateful Dead. And it was on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it being in the studios at the Annex building.
Right. That was the year we moved. Actually, we were in the annex for the good bulk of that year, but then we moved over to the powerhouse after that.
Yeah, this interview started off very low in terms of volume. I could barely hear him. I remember trying to fix the adjustment.
That's because he's high, John.
Well, that could be the case. Finally, we got it set up. I thought for sure he was going to hang up on us. But he hung in there, and we got a halfway decent interview out of him. He goes into quite a few things about St. Louis in particular, and
good.
There are some things that people might not know about a connection that St. Louis has with the Grateful Dead, too, that didn't eventually happen, but it was...
I'm assuming you're talking about the Fox Theater.
Yes.
Good. I was hoping that would be on this on this interview.
Yeah,
you'll hear it soon.
Yeah, he addresses that and other things, too. But as far as the Grateful Dead go, they have a lot of songs that I like,
mm-hmm.
but I never considered myself a Deadhead.
Me either.
I didn't get into anything beyond the more well-known songs.
Exactly. And I like his songs that he sings, and he is still looking good. He looks like an old stoner you know, today, and he's friends with Sammy Hagar, and Sammy told me a very funny story about him almost driving off. You want me to save it?
Save it for the end.
Okay.
Yeah, save that for the end. And he talks about the various bands that he was also in, like Bobby and the Midnights, Rat Dog, Kingfish.
Good.
So we'll get into all that kind of stuff, too.
I told you to put your phone on vibe.
Sorry, man.
Come on, man.
This happens every show. Hey, my phone has its own personality, and I said let it express itself.
Okay, sure.
All right. So anyway, here we go. This is Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead, of all the other bands I just mentioned, live on the phone, 2001, here at KSHE 95 in St. Louis.
And with us on this morning is Bob Weir, of course, of the Grateful Dead, formerly of the Grateful Dead. Bob, how does somebody introduce you anymore as far as your connection goes with the Grateful Dead?
A simple hi'll do.
Well, hi.
All right.
You're going to be coming to St. Louis. Rat Dog is your band, and St. Louis is going to be the first date for you on this tour.
It sounded like he hung up, didn't it?
It did sound like. You probably just dropped the phone.
He was tired of messing with this dude on the phone. If I finally get it started, and his joke is, well, I'll just hang up on him when he gets it together.
We're honored.
Why, thanks. Looking forward to it. We've been rehearsing all that kind of stuff. I won't say that we're in full form, but we'll have some fun.
Who's in the band these days?
Well, okay, we've got Rob Wasserman on bass, we've got Jay Lane on drums, Jeff Cimenti on keyboards, Mark Caron on guitar, and Kenny Brooks on sax.
I think Wasserman was the only one the name that rings a bell to me that was in the Grateful Dead.
I didn't recognize him, and I will say that his speaking voice sounds like his singing voice.
Yeah, it does.
A lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I just read somewhere where Wasserman just recently got married?
Yeah.
When was that?
About a month ago now.
About a month ago now, yeah. You like the way the band is progressing here? Rat Dog has been around now how many years?
With this lineup, about 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, we're starting to knit together, I think.
I was also wondering if the Further Festival is going to happen.
Oh, you bet. We got our best guys on it. It'll happen this summer at some point, but I think early in the summer, but we haven't dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's yet.
We're speaking with Bob Weir. Bob, you keep yourself busy with Rat Dog. If the Further Festival comes off again, you'll be doing that. And you do play. You get around. You play with a lot of different people. I've always had this impression of you as and I know the Grateful Dead per se. I mean, really ended up being a huge financial success, an entity, a thing that took on a life of its own. But I always envision you and individual members of the band as people who were just about the music, and whatever happened commercially or financially in a successful way just kind of like happened. Is that accurate?
Pretty accurate, I think. I mean, really all we do is play. You know, I don't play a lot of golf or anything like that, so I spent a lot of time with the music.
Well, I asked that question, but now, again, this was 2001. I think back now, and they may have been the first, either them or Kiss, the first to, I guess you'd have to say Kiss with the Dolls and things like that.
Yeah.
But the Grateful Dead were pretty early, too, with their ties. Remember the Grateful Dead ties were initially a pretty big deal, and they were the first ones, one of the first ones to ever market themselves with commercial products like that.
And you know, bands, you know, certainly these days and probably back then and before then, they make their money touring. Mm-hmm. You know, the Grateful Dead were never like you know, tons of platinum records or anything like that, but they were always on the road. They always sold out wherever they went, and that's where they made their money.
Yeah. And they had this image of a band that had this tremendous cult following, which was true, but it might not have been as big as you know, we might have thought of it actually being. When you think of commercially successful groups, they're probably nowhere near, like you said, you know, the U2s of the world and other bands like that. So their image, I think, in some cases is much bigger than what they really possibly were.
Did you see them?
No, I've never seen him.
You've never seen him. I saw him one time, and it was, I believe that time, one of the times they came to the, Riverport Amphitheater, and I just remember it was good, but I hate jammy bands, man. I hate when bands go into long jams. They lose me. I don't care, and I love the Black Crowes. They went through their period. The Allman Brothers do that. Just long 15-minute songs. I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't like that in concert. I don't mind it in a recording session,
really?
Recording situation.
Yeah,
I can listen to a CD like that. I want to hear the musicianship qualities of the individuals involved a lot of times. But at a concert, I want to get into the hits. I want to get to the songs that I really like. Yeah.
What's your most proud musical moment, if you can conjure one up here?
Let me think. Probably.
I use the word conjure, by the way. Right out of Green Acres.
One of the nights that either Ornette Coleman or Branford Marsalis, but I think the night that Ornette Coleman sat in with us for, you know, all night, basically, we went some pretty.
I'm sorry, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, Ornette Coleman.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who is she?
I don't know.
Out there places with him.
You know, we still play here on the Casey Classic Show on Sunday mornings. Music from Bobby and the Midnights.
What was that? He's about to expound.
What was that?
That was me.
Isn't that weird how I had the exact same reaction now as I did back then? That's crazy.
I know it was you, but I thought you were like saying like, that was good or something.
That was, you know, there was some good stuff that we did.
Yeah,
there
I think
a,
so.
A good little band. It didn't hang together because it really was a part-time band. And we had guys living on different continents and stuff like that, so it was...
that'd make it hard to keep the band together.
I would think so. Rehearsal might be a bitch.
Yeah, a good song from them was called Too Many Losers.
Really?
Too many Losers, yeah.
All right.
In order to rehearse, for instance, you couldn't call a rehearsal in the morning. You had to plan it like months in advance.
Wow. See, this is why I don't like to listen to interviews ahead of time. Because, once again, just with the Mellencamp a couple of weeks ago, he now said that rehearsals were a bitch.
Well, that just popped into my head as a joke. I mean, I haven't listened to the whole thing either in a long time, this interview. So.
That's so funny.
I wonder if I just remember it. No, that can't be me. No, not with my memory.
Yeah, we still play the song Too Many Losers. Was that the...
I'm sorry.
Come on, John.
The big song, the biggest song, most well-known song, you think, from the group?
You know, I don't think so. I think we had a couple of things like Josephine and Wrong Way Feeling from earlier on that people used to like.
Well, see, that makes sense because Casey Classics often weren't songs off albums that the artists expected to be their best songs.
Do you know those songs he's talking about?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we never play those other songs that I know of. Yeah.
Now, how did that band come together?
You know, it sort of fell together slowly over about 5 years after I made the Heaven Help the Fool record. I jammed one night with Billy Cobham and Alfonso Johnson was an old friend of mine, so we brought those guys in and then I met Brent somewhere along the way. Uh-huh. And I guess we traded out Brent Midland for Dave Garland. At some point, Bobby Cochran was an old friend of mine. It just sort of happened organically.
We're speaking with Bob Weir, Bob Weir of Rat Dog, of course, Grateful Dead fame. Bob, another one of your groups we still play music from here, because Casey goes way back with Grateful Dead and with you. Kingfish. We play Hypnotize, that live version of that song.
Yeah.
Love that tune.
Thanks.
We still get a lot of requests for that one.
That was that was actually written by David Torbert. And I think Tim Hovey, who was our sound man in Kingfish, had a hand in that as well. Well, I fell into that band when it was already going. Matthew Kelly and David Torbert put that one together with Robbie Hodnott and Chris, the drummer. I can't remember his last name.
I love it how Bob is mentioning all of these names, and I have no idea. I'm sure the people out there listening have no idea who they're talking about.
Dave Torbert was the bass player, and I played also in the Grateful Dead, New Riders of the Purple Sage.
Was Bob Weir in that, New Riders?
No.
Okay.
No.
So that was Jerry?
The Grateful Dead knocked off for a year, and those guys were coming through town, and Matthew was an old friend of mine. I went to junior high with him. And he called me up and told me that they were playing Come On Down. I brought my instrument and played with them that night, and we decided, okay, let's do this. And we did for a couple of years, a few years, actually.
What's it like to be someone like yourself, a musician who has left a long trail, a long, successful, and well-respected trail of music behind him in various bands? Of course, most of it with the Grateful Dead, but you've really been able to accomplish a lot.
I don't leave myself a whole lot of time to look back.
Yeah.
The last couple of weeks we've been involved in rehearsal, and that's a full-time gig. And, just in general, I've got plenty to do, and it doesn't leave a lot of time for reverie.
What about the Grateful Dead? Some comments, if you can, give us regarding that band and its place in history. And
well, with regard to that band, a lot of people ascribe us they're calling us, the founders of the jam band aesthetic, or whatever you call it, genre. And really, that's not true. What we were doing, I guess we carried a torch for a while, but if you go back through American musical history, our American musical heritage, that's been going on for at least the last 100 years. We just picked up on that at a time when it wasn't the popular thing to do. The radio was playing short songs, and everything was getting shorter. And for us, that wasn't particularly satisfying. We'd like to stay the theme and then work it, take it for a little walk in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. I mean,
take it for a walk in the woods.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
Take the song.
Still don't like it. I just don't.
But
what's he talking about, though? It's been going on for 100 years. I mean, it was when I think of jam bands, I think of them, and I think of the Allman Brothers Band.
I think he's talking outside of the rock and roll genre.
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
it's just.
But he makes a good point there that he's right that as far as radio is concerned, anyway, back in the 50s and 60s, 3 minutes, 2.5 minute songs was everything, and they just weren't into that, and so they, just.
Remember
that's
the
why
Queen
they
movie, We Will Rock, or Bohemian Rhapsody? They fought to get that song on their record because the guy at the record company was saying, it's got to be 2-3 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it was a 6-minute song, and it was their biggest hit ever.
Did I ever tell you the story that I experienced with Bohemian Rhapsody in 1975?
No.
I was working in Jeff City at KLIK, which was a top 40 station.
K-Lick?
K-Lick, yeah. No. Well, no, Click is what we call it. Yeah, but you...
Yeah,
the X-rated version. K-Lick Radio, come and lick us. Lick the DJs. No. So it was Click, and the music director's name was Jim Sullins at the time, and I had been into Queen prior to that because I liked the Sheer Heart Attack album, and I said to Jim, this song is amazing, this is crazy, because I always was impressed with their harmonizing and all that, no synthesizers was on their albums and everything, so they were doing it with their own talents, their own skills, and I said, man, I think this is going to be a big song. Because it was climbing up the charts a little bit, but it wasn't going real fast. It was a slow grower for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that song will never be anything. I'll tell you that right now.
Really?
And we didn't play it there. They didn't play it until it got into like the top 10. Then they started playing
it. And what song was it?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
It was Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Where's he at now, I wonder?
I don't know, but his name is Jim Sullins. If you want to get a hold of him on Facebook or something and say, hey, I know what you did. You didn't know crap back then. You don't know anything now, probably. So you know, give him some trouble.
I want to say Bob sounds really more with it than I thought he would. I mean, as a guy that has partied his whole life and has done some, you know, some major drugs, he sounds like he's got it together.
Yeah, and apparently is remorseful over all that drug usage.
Really?
Yeah. And as I thought recently, maybe a few years ago, he came out and was advising people not to smoke pot anymore.
Really?
You might want to look it up.
I don't.
I remember something like that happening. Yeah, where he just did a 360 or a 180. What is it?
It's a 180.
180, yeah. He's 360. He's smoking again. Maybe he has done a 360 since he did the 180.
All right. I'm gonna look that up.
All right. Let's get back to the interview with Bob Weir, the Grateful Dead.
And that's what we did. And for a while, it was down to pretty much us and the Almonds and a few other, you know, one or two other groups, popular groups at least, that were doing that, and everybody else was trying to do radio-friendly 3-minute songs.
Mm-hmm.
And in recent years, I guess the popularity of the whole jam band approach has kind of mushroomed. It's blossomed. I'm real happy to see that because I think that's where the best music comes from. If you look at Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Louis Jordan, any of those folks, that's what they were doing. We got good at working off of each other.
I see what he's talking about now. When he mentions Duke Ellington and all that, I'm sure those songs were long. But even this conversation is too long because it's a jazz talking about jam bands.
Well, it gets even more interesting.
And I don't see anything about Bob Weir regretting smoking pot.
You sure?
Or I don't. I just put Bob Weir regrets, and I don't see anything.
Well, you didn't put the whole thing in.
No.
Regrets smoking pot.
Okay, I'm going to do that right now.
Or doing drugs. Regrets doing drugs.
All right, let's see.
You looked that up.
All right, go ahead. Hit the
sort of a jazz approach, but we took it into popular realms and even into country realms.
When did you know enough was enough, though, on a particular song, maybe when you were playing live or when you were recording? When did you know you had reached the point where it was time to take that song in a different direction?
When the audience started snoring? I don't know.
Or to end it?
When we all agreed, sometimes we didn't know. Sometimes we overstayed our welcome. Sometimes we didn't stay long enough, for my taste. But it was when everybody agreed it was time to move on.
At any point, do you remember the pressures? You talked about the 3-minute songs that everybody was kind of doing there eventually in rock and roll after you got through the real progressive days. Do you have any recollections of you guys trying to also deal with that kind of pressure from record companies? Or did you ever feel that?
They would make suggestions, but after we had some success with the records that we put out, they figured, okay, let's just let these guys do what they do because, it doesn't seem to be broken, and there's certainly no fixing it.
We're speaking with Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead and Rat Dog. Now, Rat Dog is coming to St. Louis on the 27th of March, and we'll have more information for you on that later on in the show here today.
Great.
Bob, I appreciate you being with us here today. Any recollections of St. Louis in particular, and maybe even KC Radio? Because
before he gets into that,
yeah. First of all, I found that he says marijuana is addictive.
Yes,
that and he says that he knows guys that if they went off on it, they would probably get anxiety and the shakes and all that stuff if they didn't have it. Is that what you were talking about?
I know he said it was addictive and that he wishes that he hadn't done it.
I don't see. Well,
you don't see that.
I don't feel like reading the whole thing.
Yeah.
But he's going to talk about St. Louis.
Yeah, here we go.
You
know, KC was the only station playing you guys back then for many, many years in St. Louis.
I remember KC real well, actually. As far as St. Louis is concerned, we had a lot of crazy times. It was really the first town that we got a toehold in and achieved some popularity in back in the late 60s when we started hitting the road. It was St. Louis and New York were our first outposts. Expanded from there, but we've been coming to St. Louis since forever, and many is the story I could tell you about the times the crazy times we had there. We used to have parties.
There was a party one time out there, out in, I don't know if it was Wentzville or somewhere, There was a deck that collapsed. That was near the end.
That was right before Jerry died, I thought.
There was some sort of party they were having.
I do remember that.
Some people got hurt.
Come there and play the Fox Theater, as I recall. And after the show, we'd go back out to where we were staying. We used to stay at the Airport Hilton.
Oh, my God.
And they had a great big courtyard there with lawn, huge lawn, sort of rolling hills and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I got pretty nuts there, and they never called the police for some reason. And they just sort of let us have our way out there, and we did.
You consider yourself a survivor, Bob, or not? Or has life been pretty easy for you?
Well, I certainly got no complaints. You know, I've always just done what I've wanted to do, which is play music. And so life has been pretty kind to me, I have to admit.
How's the family situation? Do you have grown children or what?
I have a three-year-old daughter right now. She answered the phone.
Yeah, I noticed that. She's cute.
What's
her name?
You don't have that on
top? Monet.
And she's your only child?
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Well, how'd you keep that from happening for so long, buddy?
I can't say that I was all that careful, but I don't know exactly. I can't actually tell you that she's my only child for sure, but I'm sure.
Good question, John.
No, thank you. Appreciate it. Getting to the heart of things. That I was going to make it my first question, but no.
It's a very valid question.
Yeah.
How the hell he did it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Rock stars like yourself, you have the image of, you know, there's sex everywhere and everybody's aware of the drug situation and all that stuff. And I think all that stuff to a certain degree probably gets built up to mythical levels. Or maybe not. You tell me.
Well, I tell you, I had a chance to shop around and I took full advantage of it. But I'm sort of settled down now, I guess.
I just heard a phone.
You have to at some point, don't you, in your life?
Yeah.
So Monet, what has she done for you?
Well, she just did a painting for me this morning.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not what you meant.
And stuff like that. Actually, she came up with her first poem yesterday. I can't exactly remember what it was. It was something like Ugly Buggly. Ugolina, Bugolina. That was it.
Sounds to me like there's a song in there.
Right.
Could be.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, thanks for being with us today.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, Bob Weir right there.
Is that
there.
The end?
That's the end.
Oh. He did not understand what you meant. Did you mean what has she done for you, like spiritually, emotionally?
Yeah, just, you know, when you have children, they change your life.
Straight. Oh, she wrote a poem.
Can you imagine being Bob Weir's kid? I mean, what would life
be like?
So
that kid is now 20 years old.
17, yeah, 20 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a 19-year-old in my house, too,
yeah.
So I know the difference there. Yeah. But yeah, I would imagine him being a very laid-back father.
Mm-hmm.
That kid's probably has no discipline whatsoever.
No, just none.
Kind of like my 19-year-old. Anyway, you said that Sammy Hagar had a story about Bob Weir.
So Bob is really good friends with Sammy Hagar. And I remember Sammy told me once that, I mean, they would smoke a lot of dope together. You know, Bob, I remember him saying that Bob would bring his in mason jars. So if you bring it in mason jars, you know it's probably really good weed. So one night they were at his house in Cabo, and Bob leaving Sammy's, you know, residence there, put it in reverse or forward, and his car almost went off the cliff.
Oh, my gosh.
So much so that the two wheels were off. So, it was that dangerous. So they had to go out and get Bob and call a tow company and get Bob Weir's car off. And then Bob drove home. And I was like, why did he put it in forward? You know, I mean, he probably shouldn't have been driving, but I don't know. Right. But I remember that story about Bob.
Well, they say driving high, it's not unsafe. I don't agree with that.
No, I don't either.
I don't either.
You know, we could get into a debate about all this, you know, legalization of pot and everything. I just, I'm not like, yeah, we should do it. No, I'm not. That part scares me right there. So.
Well, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Bob Weir. Bob Weir's still alive and still going strong. He's the Rat Dog thing. He still tours with Rat Dog from time to time. And you know, trying to keep the Grateful Dead music alive in concerts and stuff. And I still enjoy hearing Grateful Dead music to this day. I can still enjoy, you know, Uncle John's Band.
Yep, absolutely.
Truckin', mm-hmm. Alabama Getaway.
Helena Bucket. Those are really good songs.
I wish I could have got into more stuff with him, but we only had a limited time.
Good job, John. It was a good interview.
Well, thank you.
Solid.
Thank you, Favaz. Appreciate that. What's next week?
We don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll see you then. We don't know. I don't know. Maybe Jimmy Page. Remember?
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah. But we do coming up. We have Nick Mason and we have Roger Waters because of El Monstero. So that'll be coming up in the month of December. But, you know, we just decided on Bob Weir yesterday.
Yeah. El Monstero is a show that is done here in St. Louis. If you're listening outside of St. Louis, you're not aware. It's a band that has been a tribute group to Pink Floyd, and they are spectacular.
They only do it here, maybe Chicago, Kansas City, Springfield, that's it.
Yeah.
They don't tour behind it.
So that's why we'll have Nick Mason and Roger Waters to tie into that event here locally in St. Louis.
It'll be cool.
All right, until next time, U-Man here, saying so long. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUMAN.
Favaz, Casey Guy. Ready? Our sign-off. 1, 2, 3.
Adios, my friend.
The KC Tapes with U-Man and Favaz. For more on the history of KC, go to KC95.com or the KC mobile app.